For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. We start off the week with one of this show's longest-serving guests, not only as a guest of the show, but also as manager of the England Seaside. Paul Fairclough is over two decades on the job, and admits he's as enthusiastic as ever in the role. A game Tuesday night in Wales is followed in May by a home game against Nepal at Aldershot Town. And as Paul explains, the non-league international setup has been the stepping stone for so many successful footballers. Next, a debutant to the show, chairman at Brentwood Town, Jez Dickinson, has big plans for this club that have helped him partner up with one of sport's business masters. And a setup in place means plans for a 3G pitch will be laid as soon as the season ends. It's clear he's enjoying the ride, but he's also very appreciative of the team he has around him, both on and off the field. Running up the show and the news, Matt Badcock of the Non-League Paper, covering the stories and the talking points of the week. And he also gives an insight into what we can read in this weekend's paper. So lots to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Let's start the show off then with an old friend of the show and a man who perhaps knows non-league and the players involved maybe as better or as best as any. On Tuesday, he takes his England Seaside to Llanelli Town when they take on Wales in what's become, well, an international match every year. And this week we learned that there's to be a second match for the national non-league side, May the 6th at Aldershot Town, against Nepal. To tell us more, let's give a warm non-league football show welcome to England Seabots, Mr. Paul Fairclough. Welcome back, Paul.
Hi.
Good to get you back on, Paul.
That's a pleasure.
Let's start with Tuesday. And before all of that, we've got a weekend of football. Do you get more nervous as an England C manager on weekends like this, before these midweeks, or due to the fear of injury and everything like that, than you did when you were a club manager?
Absolutely, yeah. It's much more involved, you know. At club level, you know, you have maybe 20 players or so. I mean, I know some clubs are having injury problems now beyond that. But with the England C team, we have to have, we have to have contingency squads. And even that, at times, you know, we've had to. But what I've done, Tim, is and also, I mean, this fixture comes at a very difficult time in the season. Mm. You know, it is the business end of the season. And notoriously in the past, some clubs who were challenging or trying to protect their status in the league were quite reluctant to release players. So what I've done for the last couple of years, I've made it a one club, one player per club. And that seems to be a ruling, because the squad that I've chosen, of which we've lost two players already, but they're through injury. So they're not with the club sort of, you know, rejecting, or the players being told to reject, which has been done in the past. But no, all the players who we've got are just really honoured. I mean, I've had some lovely messages already about how excited they are, and even one or two thanking me for selecting them. So it means such a lot to these players.
Yeah, and you mentioned that one club, one man, one club policy. And what I liked actually this time around was all of the clubs seemed to get behind it as well. They all seemed really, on their social media accounts, every one of those players was promoted by their own club and the fact that they were in the England Seaside.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it means a lot out there, you know, to non-league footballers and to non-league supporters. You know, it means a lot, this team. I mean, ever since you and I have been around, and a lot longer before that, there's always been an England non-league football team. And we want to grow the team again. And hopefully the Wales game, which now we have an actual trophy for, so we're actually playing for a cup. You know, that's a great fixture for us, you know, because Welsh football has improved so much. I've obviously been with England C a long time, and I've seen in improving and getting stronger and better across the board. So they are a really a real test of a game, that Welsh game.
And you've got a long list of players that have played for you for England C that have gone on, you know, to great things, both across non-league and the wider world of football. But Mark Jones, overseeing the Welsh side, has got a similar list as well. It shows the benefit of these games.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not so long ago that we were playing Estonia in the snow in Estonia, and Ethan Pinnock was in the back line, you know. I mean, even at Luton now, Luke Berry, who gets the occasional appearance for Luton, he's still ploughing his trade there. You know, he played for England C. And we were looking at figures the other day, actually. And we were looking at, so, I mean, there must be over, getting off of 500 players who played, of which 300 have gone back into the Football League or made appearances in the Football League. So it's a team that really works. I mean, look, I understand completely that all the hard work is done at the clubs, but there seems to be something when you put on that England shirt, it elevates them that little bit more. It gives them more confidence. And also, it's, you know, we get scouts flocking to the game. So it works. Yeah. It works.
And you mentioned how much it means to the players. Anybody that read last week's non-league paper saw an interview with Tom Eastman from Dagenham there. You normally focus on young talent, but, you know, there's a guy, age 32, done a lot in non-league, and you just have to read it. It oozes excitement. It's such a big deal for these players.
Yeah, that's right. We've got to... we got players who we got a situation with Jamie Grahams at the moment, Chesterfield, who's desperate to play for us because he's, you know, if he gets promoted with Chesterfield, he's not going to get an England shirt. Mm. You know, so he's desperate to play for us, but he's just got to wait and see how his fixtures go this weekend, you know. Mm. But all the players, I mean, the responses of the players have been quite amazing, really has.
And there was a wry smile across my face this week when I saw news of that second game this summer, May the 6th. How important is it to have more than one international for this generation of players?
Absolutely, it's critical. And this game has come along at a good time for England C because of the political part in this game. You know, we are entertaining a full international squad here who are using this game for their World Cup preparations. We know they're 175th ranked in the world, but it's a huge, huge game with lots of sort of interesting things going on around it. It's going to attract a lot of the attention in the higher echelons of the Football Association. And for me, that can only be good because it's England C who'll be putting on the showcase. And it's going to be an important game, full stop. I mean, you know, we're expecting the full house there at Old Shot. But it's also another game to just nudge the people who, you know, in the right places and say, look at this team, see what it does, see what the interest it creates. I mean, and don't forget, I mean, this is a team that, Tim, that not only when we play a game, or when we used to play games abroad, but when we did play games abroad, we were sort of a community side as well. I mean, I can remember us going out to Jordan and entertaining 100 Syrian refugees, you know, and going into schools in various other countries. So there's always been that almost ambassadorial role to the team. And that might be a direction that the FA want to take it. Not saying that's the right direction, because I think England C is strong enough to stand alone in what it does.
Well, as you say, I mean, this fixture in May is going to be part of a visit from the All Nepal Football Association, helping raise the profile of football to the Nepalese community in England, increase participation from
absolutely
the wider South Asian community. So it's going to be something with Hampshire FA, I believe, the Army FA, Aldershot Town. You'll make the most of it. I know you will. And I don't think it's any secret that you're always up against it as England C manager. But beyond non-league, the England C perhaps doesn't get the credit it deserves for developing young men and young professional players. You don't have any of the resources that the men's national team gets, many of the other national teams also get. But whatever resources you have, you appear to use them to your maximum advantage.
Yeah, well, we have to do that because to keep England C alive, we need to deliver. When those players come through, deliver some aspects of the game that they've never, ever experienced before. And that always happens. We take the because we've got 48 hours with a group to put on a performance. We have to delve in and bomb that team straight away. And we take them through a program that we've been tried and tested. And it blows them away. Mm. And they leave feeling better. You know, you talked about improving people's lives. And these players, you know, they'll be stretched mentally when they come to this camp. And they'll be asked to do things that they've never done before.
And as I say, you get the most out of everything. And yeah, I know you will know I'm not being rude about this, but being honest, in old school terminology, that's because you're a wily old sod, aren't you? Yeah, I mean, you know the game, you know the people, you know life isn't a bed of roses, but you instill in these people, you get the best out of them. You've always got results. Yeah, I'm looking. I don't know how many people know your record in management, you know, Hertford Town, then Stevenage Borough, various stints at Barnet they probably know about, but few probably even know that you won titles and went up through the levels with Stevenage, Isthmian 2 North, Isthmian 1, Isthmian Premier, and the Conference into Division 2. I mean, that's pretty special as well. So even when I meet you, I learn new things.
No, thank you for that, Tim. That's very kind of you. And yeah, I mean, I think there'll be one or two, or maybe even more players who've never heard of the England squad, who've never even heard of me, you know, such as the length of time I've been doing it. I mean, you know, I mean, I can remember the very first occasion I took an England game. That was 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the moments and the passion that I feel for it when we stand on that pitch and we stick our chests out and we sing the national anthem, it's just one of the... And it continues to be one of the proudest moments of my life, you know, each time it happens. So I'm as fresh as a daisy. I have a thirst for learning about the game all the time. And I just want to try to, you know, help these players and have a great experience, you know.
Interesting you say that. Learning is... I've got that in big letters on my bit of paper in front of me here. I mean, how have... England C boss since, 2003. How have players changed in that time and how do you need to deal with them now?
Yeah, well, it's really quite an interesting question, that, because things have definitely changed. And it goes in terms of what's happened in football in the country. We are now experiencing the benefits of the academy system that was created some 10, 12 years ago, because non-league football now is being flooded with players who've been, you know, released from clubs. And they're very, very technical players. When I look back to the teams I was picking in, you know, back in my first years, they were good footballers. There's no question about that. They wouldn't get an England team if they weren't. But now you've got this group of technical players. Tim, I can go to a step four, step five game. Mm. I mean, I can walk across the road to the local park on a Sunday afternoon, and the back four are spreading out across the pitch and the keeper's playing it with his feet, you know. And then they're wondering why the ball's in the back of the net within a couple of seconds. but But it's, you know, we've got a group of technical footballers in this country, and you know, you're dealing with much more technically talented players.
And we've said about the, you know, what England C means to those players to get called up. But if there's any player at step one, step two now thinking he deserves a crack at England, at the England C side, how does he attract your attention?
Well, they just, I mean, there's players who have attracted our attention for obvious reasons. You know, for example, the boy Pierce from Worthing, you know, he's been popping in goals. But we go deeper than that. We do, you know, we have a lot of information of players, and some players who they don't go under the radar because, you know, we have reams and reams of data, Tim, on players. You know, I can make comparisons with say, for example, I've got six left backs that I like. I can make comparisons. I can see them. Mm. I can watch videos on them. And then we've got the data on them as well on how successful they are on the pitch, which everyone has. I'm presuming they all have that at club level now and in the National League clubs as well, and steps one and two. So for me, you know, listen, these players who play non-league football, they've got a passion, they've got a desire for it, and all I'd say is just keep doing what you're doing. And you know, I mean, like this game against Nepal, for example, it's important for me to pitch the right team for this game. You know, so the doors will be wide open again for people to make a push for that game.
And outside football, your job was as a teacher. Do players that attract your eye need to be those who want to learn and improve?
Yes, of course. I mean, it does help. But you know, such as the, I mean, when I pull in a squad, we don't know much about them as people, you know. So, but since I've been manager of the England C team, I can only say that the guys that I've dealt with, the players that I've dealt with, have been super intelligent. You know, they've been thirst to learn, and you know, I've not had anyone, you know, looking disinterested. They're all on the edges of the seat, and it's just, they're all a joy. They're a joy to work with because, Tim, they're putting on they're sitting in the meeting room with me and the other staff, and they've got, you know, the three lines on their chest, you know, and they're sitting there. What more motivation does a footballer want? That, I mean, these guys who go out against Wales, they are representing, you know, millions of non-league footballers.
And I remember years ago talking to you about learning and learning, the fact that learning benefits from a rest period after almost that intense learning. It needs time to sort of bed in and sink in. With that in mind,
yeah, of course.
Do you think that the modern day of a crash bang wallop, you know, and shorter off season and all that sort of thing, is that detrimental to developing players?
Yeah, there needs to be. I mean, look, well, at international level, we have the international breaks, don't we? Which, you know, a lot of clubs, because it is a learning theory, you know, that when you walk away from something for a while, you know, it takes that learning to sink in and click into place and move on again. So it is a very intense season. I mean, you know, we've got this intense game coming up against Wales, and unfortunately, because of all the conditions of the weather, we've had to salvage some players who would normally put on an England shirt because there's just no other days left to squeeze in any more fixtures, you know. So, sadly, one or two players have missed out. Such is the way that, I mean, you know, I would be saying, are we trying to finish the season too soon? You know, are we trying to, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, we have to fit in dates with Wembley and playoffs and things. But we seem to be ramming the season into a short space of time And as you quite rightly said, you know, the intensity is, and there ain't that much time for learning to take place.
And there is a lot to be said for reflection, because I know I benefit from the long drives I do every week. I don't think it's any secret that, I mean, you've got a few miles on your own clock. How long can Paul Faircloth keep England sea flourishing?
Well, that's a question, isn't it? I mean, because I'm as enthusiastic now from that first day I took it when we were played against Belgium. I can remember it clearly. The Conference League at the time boycotted the fixture because there was some kind of dispute between the FA and the national and the conference. And I can remember clearly in the offices at Lancaster Gate, selecting a group of footballers from step three and four for my first international. And the buzz I got then, it was fantastic. And the buzz I've got now, as we're building up to this weekend, it's exactly the same. There's no difference. So in answer to your question, is it bring it on? You know, I'm going to carry on until someone taps me on the shoulder and says, "Hey, you've had enough. It's your turn to hand the baton to someone else." But try getting that baton off me, Tim, now, and I'll rip the heads off.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to be involved in that fight. I quite fancy watching it. A quick reminder then to everybody, Tuesday evening under the lights against Wales at Llanelli Town, 7:45 kickoff, and then one for the diaries, Monday the 6th of May at Aldershot Town against Nepal, 3 p.m. kickoff that one. Paul Faircloth, as I said earlier on the show, I learn every time I speak to you and meet you. It's a pleasure always to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck on Tuesday.
Yeah, very kind of you, Tim. Thank you ever so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, so we'll speak more about clubs in peril later, no doubt, in the show. I just want to make sure that we had more about celebrating clubs that are going well, building and growing. My next guest club are at Step 4 in the ESPN League North in a fairly small town in Essex, already known as a world sporting hub. And the football club is hoping to become as famous as its town partner. It's a warm Non-League Football Show welcome then to Chairman at Brentwood Town, Jez Dickinson. Welcome, Jez.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
I said a world sporting hub, Brentwood. Of course, it's the HQ for Matchroom Sport, the heart of PDC Darts, World Snooker, indeed World Boxing. And one of the big impacting moves you've made this season at the club is bringing Matchroom Sport on board as a shirt sponsor. I mean, that's a great coup. How did that all come about?
Well, it came about because we were connected with St Francis Hospice and doing some work with them. And funny enough, Trevor Brooking and Barry Hearn were ambassadors / patrons of St Francis Hospice, a local charity which does great work in sort of like the Romford area and all throughout Brentwood, etc. And he came to one of the games. We had some lunch, we chatted, I sat next to him actually in during the match, and I'm quite animated, I think he quite liked it really, and he sort of said, well, you know, I'd like to meet up again and maybe we can chat about how I can support you and what you're trying to achieve at Brentwood. So had a few lunches with him, had some chats, and obviously, he's been very supportive, both financially and obviously sponsoring the club, and also just from a, you know, a business support point of view as well.
Brilliant. I mean, non-league is all about the connections, and I mean, shirt sponsorship just one of the many revenue streams that clubs need to look at. And of course, with the weather as it is at the moment, a lot of clubs looking at 3G pitches, and your club no different, I understand. Tell us about Project 3G at Brentwood.
That's correct. Yeah. So, I mean, I took over the club in 2019, and for my sins, I think I didn't complete the season until 2 or 3 years ago because the first 2 years of COVID early sort of finish. But I sort of realised reasonably quickly that the pitch, which is a sort of a clay pitch in the Brentwood area, and obviously with the weather that we had throughout the winter, I've become, literally from about Sunday at 10:30 in the morning to the next game, I'm sort of on Met Office weather watcher thinking how much rain we have in, what do we need to be the pitch? So I've been working for a while, really, with the council and as a club to put together a proper project to get a 3G pitch down. And that's what we're driving through this year. It's going to be completed and laid on the 7th of May and be ready for sort of 2 months after that. So pretty much hopefully sort of, I don't know, what's that going to be? Sort of mid to late July. So in time for the start of the season. It's one of those things where there's no template to it. It doesn't matter who all the people you ask for. You sort of join the dots as you go. And it's been, it's challenging. It's definitely challenging to go through this. I mean, I think obviously working in my business is sort of a commercial business, private business, and where I have to make decisions, get things done, et cetera, et cetera. And when you're dealing with anything with councils and grants, etc., they have a different process, which I've done my best to be as patient as I can do, because everything seems to take a lot longer. I've got to be polite.
As a man that has to deal with a lot of red tape myself, I understand where you're coming from. But again, it's all about the relationships, isn't it? Because I'm sure you've been to meetings, you've probably been to lunches, you've been to maybe breakfast meetings. But all these guys in the local community, schools, clubs, voluntary organisations, and it's all about building those relationships so that the future use of your football club has a long-term plan.
Exactly. I mean, my background when I took over the club in, say, 2019 was based on the fact that having played sort of a similar standard myself, and then my son came into Brentwood Town under 13s, the EGA, went through all the youth section. He was sort of 17, 18 when I took over the club, and he was just finishing sort of the youth and had a few games and training sessions with the first team at Brentwood Town, and the chairman, funny enough, stood down. So my connection with the club is through the youth, because I've helped manage the side that he was in. Like anything, all non-league clubs they need sort of some energy, some financial support, and some drive to try and sort of generate a catalyst to improve the facilities. And that's not only for the first team, but obviously for the youth teams and then the local community. So obviously what I've had to have done, which is the right thing, is that the pitch is going to be not only for Brentwood Town, but for Brentwood as well. Mm. Local schools, local clubs, and anybody else that wants to hire it. And that's sort of like a prerequisite, really, for us delivering it.
And week in, week out, we tend to hear about how important community element is of a successful club. I mean, you've partnered up with the other big name in the local town in Brentwood, but that's by chance, it sounds. So is community something that's strong in the town anyway, or is it something that the club are having to help build and craft?
I think it's one of those things where at this stage it's creating the catalyst. The 3G pitch is going to be the catalyst to deliver that for the community, because you can talk about it till the cows come home, but you need a vehicle to be able to deliver for the community. And the pitch, in all due respect, I mean, the groundsman does a great job. But there's only so many games you can have on that pitch before the next game. Which is why the 3G then creates that all-weather pitch and then opens it up for the whole community. So it's trying to, it's like anything in life, it's trying to persuade people that they need to help and support us to get this because it's going to benefit lots of other people. And the community itself, you know, the pitch will open up a lot. And again, there's not enough 3G pitches around the Brentwood area, which is why, you know, they're in such short supply. And also there's hardly any stadium pitches. So obviously it's going to be a stadium 3G pitch, which is, in all due respect, a lot higher profile than a school 3G pitch, you know, at a school. So hiring that out is going to be even better for local clubs and schools, etc. So, yeah, you're right. The community is massively important. And it's sort of... but I think what I'm trying to... Well, not what I think. What I'm trying to create is not just a football pitch for Brentwood Town Football Club and their teams. It's to create, in effect, really, a Brentwood and Brentwood Town football hub where we'll have academy 5 to 11 year olds. We've got 250 in the Brentwood Town Academy that obviously play on, we have pitches at the back, but obviously they'll be able to play on a 3G pitch, do training, etc. And we're looking to produce academy as well for sort of under 19s to give them a little bit more than just playing matches, but maybe some classroom stuff as well. That's the plan.
The original Brentwood, though, dates back to, what, 19th century? I think they reached the quarterfinals of the FA Cup in 1886, before my time. I think they were beaten 3-1 by Blackburn Rovers. But the current club, founded in 1954 as Manor Athletic, renamed 2004. And, of course, Jimmy Greaves, a former player. So plenty of history of successful football in the town. You're currently fourth in that Isthmian North in the playoffs. Yeah. What, you're 12 points behind leaders Lowestoft Town, 3 games in hand. Is the club ready for football at Step 3, having been there before, of course? A playoff winners 2014 under Adam, 2014-15 under Adam Flanagan.
Yeah. That's correct. Yeah. Are we ready? Definitely we're ready. Yeah. I mean, we've got a great management team in place with Keith Rowland and Steve Butterworth, very experienced at this level of football and above. The players we have, the squad and the players that we have, are more than ready. So yes, I mean we were in the playoff final 2 years ago. We lost to Canvey on penalties, so we could have gone up 2 years ago. Were we ready then? Maybe not quite. Maybe that was destiny that we weren't ready to go up 2 years ago. But we're definitely more than ready now. The ground's ready, and obviously we'll have a brand new 3G pitch and facilities infrastructure around that. I mean, who knows? I mean, you're right. We're playing the second place Felixstowe on Saturday away at Felixstowe, which is always a tough place to go. They're a good team. There's some good team. Lowestoft, Bury, Felixstowe, ourselves, probably the four clubs which all have a chance of winning the title, if not being in the playoffs. What would I rather do? Obviously, just win it and go up. But if not, we've got two games, two cup finals for the playoffs, and I'm sure, like a lot of chairmen at non-league clubs, it's the hope that kills you. It really is.
And I'm looking here. I mentioned that gap between you and the leaders, Lowestoft. And also those 3 games in hand you have. That puts the gap to 3 points if you win them all. No pressure, though. Their goal difference considerably better. But, you know, there's still a few games to go. But that doesn't half make that last game of the season for you at Lowestoft pretty tasty even now.
I know. You couldn't write the script, could you? No. That's literally, yeah. If we can do as well as I hope we can, because Lowestoft has still got to play Felixstowe. Which away, so that's going to be a tough game for them, so they could well lose points there. The last game of the season going up to Lowestoft could be heartbreaking for either side. That's what you do it for. You know, I mean, you're doing it for the moments where it really matters. But I'm quietly confident that we'll be there or thereabouts. The team's good enough, and it's a good camaraderie in the team. It's not just we haven't put together, you know, 13, 14, 15 good players from anywhere. We've a lot of them are Brentwood, come through the ranks, maybe have left and then come back again. Mm. But probably I would say about 8 or 9 about 9 or 10 of the sort of 17, 18 in the squad have got had very close connections with Brentwood. Mm. So that means something.
And it's great to report on your club thriving. We've already seen one club, though, with a long history disappear from your division this season, East Thurrock United. So, I mean, let's make it clear, it's probably tougher than ever to run a non-league football club.
Well, I suppose it's... I don't know whether it's tougher than before, because obviously I've only been doing it since 2019. But I can assure you it's tough. I think, we've got great volunteers that support me. And that's what you have to rely on because the gates have gone up a lot from when I took over. I think we averaged about 125, 130 when I first went there. We're sort of on 250 now. Mm. So we've doubled it. We look to try and get sort of 300, 400. That's what we should be getting. That's what sort of the likes of Berry and Felixstowe and Lowestoft get, if I'm honest. Mm. But again, it's tough, I think, when you're in a sort of a cosmopolitan, more of a place like Brentwood, where the choice of fans or community is to go up into London or to Lakeside Bluewater and do other stuff. Compared to maybe some towns, say like Felixstowe, where the choice to go, in other words, the football club is probably more of the hub, and that's the objective, to create Brentwood and Brentwood Town as that's the hub for people, or at least more people to go to on a Saturday. It's tough to run. I mean, people don't realise. My mates, you know, speak to them, they go, how much time do you spend?
You don't want to add that bit up. No, you don't want to add that bit up or admit that to anybody else.
My long suffering wife, unfortunately, she does come and help at the club. You know, most home games, to be fair, but she doesn't. You know, she's not a massive football fan, but she, you know, obviously she's interested. But she rues the times when, you know, we've lost or we haven't won or we should have done, and she sort of tries to find out before I get home, because there's a different mood depending on what the result is when I get home. It's hard to hide it. That's the passion, isn't it?
As you said, May 2019 you became chairman, I think it was. You were involved in the youth team level before that, but in those, what, nearly 5 years you've been chairman, we've had COVID lockdowns, we've had economic crunches, weather worries. What have you learned, one, about football, two, about other people, and three, about yourself in that time?
It's a good three-part question. I like it. I learned about other people. Let's start with that. What I learned about other people there's a core of people that are very loyal to me and to Brentwood Town. And without them, there's no way that, you know, I could have continued or we could have continued, because you need that sort of support, both physically, logistically, and emotionally, I think, because it's easy to lose heart, because you feel like you're treading through treacle the whole time, especially through COVID and obviously the downsides. So what I've learned is that, you know, there's a lot of people that are loyal. There's obviously a lot of people that are fickle, but you have to, you know, that's human nature. And you bet there's a lot of people that connected with the club that have been very loyal to me and very, you know, very good for the club long term. So that's what I've learned about people. I think regarding football, I don't know. I think it's Doesn't matter what happens, people bounce back with football, and it's in their blood. It doesn't matter how many bad things happen and how much they moan about it, they always go back. And that's what I think has proven even more. It actually, the fact of not having football has made people appetite to watch it and be part of it even more. That's what I think. And what does it talk about myself? it's taught me that I'm probably more resilient than I thought I was. I'm quite a resilient individual. That I definitely don't like losing. and that's anybody that knows me knows that's probably the very polite way of saying it, really. I'm probably not the stereotypical chairman that sits in the stand in the director's box and claps politely. I have to move around just to keep my sanity and myself not rocking as I'm watching the game, because that's a good analogy you used with Barry Hearn. I sat next to him, obviously, and it was actually played Witten. I mean, we were 3-1 down, we won 5-3. So, and literally, probably near the end, as I think we got two late goals, literally every time the ball went in the butt, I was sort of moving, and I think I caught him a couple of times with an elbow, just in my animation. He went, "Are you always like this?" I said, "Well, no, I'm normally a lot worse. I mean, I'm best behaviour because I'm next to you, Barry." So, he's taught me that. Right, he taught me that you're, as an individual, you find a way to get it to work, and you have to. What it's taught me is that I think having the right relationships with individuals within the club and externally is paramount. Really, everyone, you need a lot of support, and that hopefully works both ways.
Oh, it's been fantastic to talk to you. Fantastic that you've opened up, and fantastic to give the world the showcase of Brentwood Town. Hopefully, put a few more on the gate. Jez Dickinson, best of luck at the weekend. Best of luck for the rest of the season. Thank, and thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Time once again then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Time to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Editor-at-Large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
Every now and then we do have you back. It's good to have you back. I've got
always a good call-up.
I've got to blow some smoke as well, haven't I? Again, another outstanding achievement last weekend, Matt, from the team at the Non-League Paper. We mentioned it last week, but last weekend, probably even better. Gangs falling foul of the weather. Do you get the chills down your spine when you hear weather forecasters mentioning incoming wet weather now?
I do, but that's why I took last Saturday off, so that I could just lie in a darkened room and not have to worry about it. Yes, game off is burnt into my brain at the moment. And then on Tuesday, I'm thinking, at least I can get a good time to get out to a game. We're getting to this end of the this sort of exciting part of the season. I'll get out and watch a game, and then open the curtains on Tuesday morning, and the rain's tumbling down. It feels like it rains on Tuesdays even harder than any other day of the week at the moment. So yeah, all local games were off again. So it's a bit frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, and lots of social media moans and groans again this week about games being called off. And I know by all the red tape that I have to deal with that we do live in an era where health and safety is perhaps a bigger concern than it was maybe 40, 20, probably even 10 years ago. But I have at my fingertips here official government figures that show for the UK it was the fourth wettest February since 1871 when the records began. And the rainfall was actually well over double the average just in February alone this year. That's revealing. But when you look at the impact of that look at the water table. You look around, anybody go out into anywhere near the countryside, you'll see most of the floodplains are under at least, you know, a centimetre or more of water. And if there's water, it's flooded everywhere. The land's just saturated, so the rain has nowhere to go. And when you go to the end of February, apparently it was the wettest 18 months since records began, so 1871, the wettest 18 months since then. That's why there's so many games off, and March hasn't been much better either. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, unless we start having stadiums with roofs on.
Yeah, it's. I think that just goes to show, I think you say, you know, that ultimately we can't do anything about the weather. And I think sometimes there is a bit of a, you know, as if clubs are sort of stringing people along and, you know, calling. We've seen the frustration, haven't there, with clubs. Some clubs think the game should have been on when they're not, and you kind of get that. And, you know, the impact on a club when a game is off, especially when there's been such a run, is quite significant, that, you know, the money that isn't coming in on that particular day. So, you know, there's lots going on. But I think, you know, there is that also that part of it where everyone's doing their best, and sometimes you just can't get games on.
I think
you know, there's an emphasis on making sure pitches are better, and I think they probably are by and large. But also, you know, there are some clubs that, you know, where their pitches are, they just can't withstand it, can it? So,
and even when a game does go, it's not like someone's just decided, you know, 5 days before that game's going to be off. Hopefully not. It'd be very rare that it was that reason. You know, there's many hours of blood, sweat and tears, volunteers tending to pitches. There's also multiple telephone calls being made by people. There's various necessary admin to get a game off, organising pitch inspections by match officials. And all of those people that have been involved in that, they've been inconvenienced too. But they're having to do what they have to do to make football continue. So, you know, you don't see them, most of them aren't sniping on Twitter or forums. They're just getting on with it to ensure that football still runs in adversity. And I think we just need to acknowledge and salute them and thank them for all their help and time, because even if a game's not on, there's a lot of work that's gone on. And actually, that's additional work than if the game had been played.
Yeah, 100%. As we always say on here, don't we, how many people are putting in so much good and hard work. And also, I think you think of the games that are on because of people that have, you know, got out there and done what they need to do. And, you know, all those phone calls, as you say, have been made, and inspections have been organised. And, you know, I think ultimately everybody wants to watch a game of football. That's kind of why, you know, we're in it for. That's why we do what we do, because we want to turn up and watch a game of football and have that that enjoyment that we get from that, and that escapism. So it's frustrating for everybody, but I think we can sort of forget sometimes when a club does, you know, tweets that the game's off, and you sort of see some of the comments underneath, and you sort of, there's people behind that who have worked hard and tried their best, and as we say, often for very little or no reward.
Yeah, and you've got a number of, you know, my own club this weekend, the venues change for the game, and obviously that's inconvenient. Some people that maybe book their travel, book their accommodation for an overnight stay. But if it wasn't changed earlier on in the week, the chances of the game actually being played anyway were probably very, very minimal. So everybody's trying to make a decision to make sure that we can watch some football.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, isn't it? It is... we get into that exciting stage of the season where we want the games. We want to see what's going to happen. We want to see, you know, you've got all the excitement of it, and it's, you know, it's not ideal for anybody for the games to be stacking up as they're going to. There's, you know, season end of the season's fast approaching, and you know, as a, from a sort of player and a manager's point of view, they want to be, you know, the games be spread out as much as possible from that workload point of view, and from a fan's point of view, you want that as well, because you want to watch good games and good quality of football, and not players who are absolutely out on their feet because they've been having to play so much. So it is, it's been a frustrating period. I mean, like you say, those stats there, that's kind of back up what you feel. You know, I feel like every week we've been in the office at the NLP on Saturday, you know, so, you know, another game goes late on, or you know, we can't. It feels like we just need one of those Saturdays where everything's on, and it will happen again soon. And I'm sort of slightly encouraged by how mild it's feeling outside now, but that probably in this country probably means that there's probably be a frost at the weekend or something after that.
Yeah, and on the same sort of similar sort of topic, there's been lots of debate on social media as to whether the semi-finals of the FA Vase and FA Trophy should be two-legged affairs. We saw the final draws of the FA Trophy, FA Vase this week. Games will be played as those two-legged semi-final affairs. Saturday the 30th of March for the first leg. Saturday the 6th of April for the second leg. FA Vase, we've got Worcester City facing Great Wakering Rovers. Romford will play Lincoln United, and in the FA Trophy, Gateshead take on Macclesfield. And Bromley meet Solihull Moors. So much debate about those two legs with pitches, weather. Maybe I don't know, am I a traditionalist? But I think with such a big prize, a chance of home and away really does, well, it makes it a leveler. It makes it more exciting for me.
Yeah, I think I kind of sort of lean towards the two legs as well. And obviously it's interesting that the Vase have brought that back in this year. The trophy is staying with where they are with the single one-off games. And, you know, that does mean that is a big, obviously, you know, an advantage for those teams who've been fortunate enough to be drawn at home. But, you know, I'm sure history tells us that doesn't necessarily, you know, guarantee you pass into the final. But I've always quite like, enjoyed the sort of the Vase semi-finals and the two legs. I think it's sort of, you know, when you're playing against clubs that are often so unfamiliar to each other and, you know, not ever come across each other really because of the separate ends of the country or wherever it may be. And I think it gives everybody at the both clubs that sort of chance to have that big home occasion. And, you know, the sort of the fever that brings around a town and the people that it brings into contact with you. With your club when you are one tie, two games from Wembley, and I think I quite sort of like the fact that it's back because it does add that extra dimension to it, and it keeps it. You know, I think I think if you're going to go one leg in there, that I think you probably have to go neutral grounds, and you know that's not going to be. I can't see that kind of happening, but yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting from a. From a journalist's point of view, we don't love writing first leg reports, so I don't think I've ever managed to say anything other than it's only half time in about five different variations. So it's it's kind of a strange. There are strange match reports to write unless something really big is happening. It can often be quite cagey, but I've always sort of enjoyed that kind of that jeopardy of the first leg and kind of do you stick or twist at times in the game and. Yeah, especially if you're home first and you've got to go away and if it's a long trip, and it's it does really add something to it. And they're going to be all the semi-finals are going to be fascinating. Like, you know, you can't the way all the competition we go in this season, you wouldn't really want to pick out who you think will be in the final, really.
It certainly. I think it gives fans a bigger tale, bigger story to tell for years to come, their involvement in those semi-finals. Fans' tales, clubs in crisis this week. After we went to... we spoke with John Council last week. Rochdale passed those various changes at their EGM last week, which allows a new share issue, and that's opened up an exclusivity period for them with their new potential buyers, World Soccer Holdings LLC, which looks a positive move. After much debate in the non-league fraternity about the rules, the National League have this week confirmed that Torquay United, in issuing that notice to appoint an administrator, have triggered the 10-point deduction rule, which sees them now, 17th in the National South, four places and 3 points above the drop, but just 6 points, I think, in their last 10 matches. They're going to be very much looking over their shoulder. I'm looking at their fixtures as well, Torquay United there to come in the National South. Games against fellow strugglers, Welling United, Truro City, Taunton Town and Havant and Waterlooville. And then just the leaders, Yeovil, promotion chasers, Bath City and Hampton and Richmond Borough to come.
Yeah, some huge games that have taken on, as you say, even more significance because of the situation that they're now in. And said about Welling there. They've been flying recently, maybe at Yeovil, and you know, a lot of those boys don't want as well. But it's going to be, it's really obviously a difficult situation generally for the club and Warren, and you know, hopefully it's going to be sort of good news on the bigger picture. But there is that also, as you say, that immediate problem now of trying to make sure they can get enough points so they don't really, you know, they are sort of in a relegation battle now, so to speak, but so they can sort of kind of use the fact that they are in theory better than their position in the table shows now because of the points deduction. So they need to make sure that they make that tell and kind of pull away. But from the clubs who are down there, from their point of view, it's another team that's been pulled into it. And you know, I think it's going to be, from a neutral's point of view, it's going to be an exciting battle at all ends of the tables, in both ends of the tables, in all the divisions. So it's obviously a worrying time, and they can, the fans are hopefully, you know, be hoping that they can get some results quickly and they can have a quite stress-free end to the season.
A stress-free end to the season? Surely not. Surely not.
Imagine that.
Yeah, we spoke to John Cowes last week about the managerial merry-go-round maybe sort of slowing down a little, and it's almost as if someone pushed the off button. I think the only sort of major interesting point of note, I guess, was Mask United have announced that former players Craig Shelton and Simon Casanali, they're going to be moving from North Riding Leaguers Redcar Newmarket to become the new management team at the end of the season, as Mask United look to re-enter the football pyramid again. An interesting appointment, I guess, mainly because Mask United won't even know what level of the pyramid they might be playing at.
Yeah, I guess from their point of view, they want to be... As soon as that email drops with where they are and where they're going to be sort of starting again, that they can really hit the ground running and be as ready as possible. So it's been a difficult season for their fans. You know, back into this season, not having any football to watch, and I guess it keeps that excitement going for them, and kind of keeps your fans engaged that something's happening that's been planned at the club, and hopefully better days are ahead generally. So, and you know, great opportunity for those guys as well to be going in there and taking on a club that, you know, they'll know they've sort of seen the potential of, and obviously, you know, great Vars runs and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be, an interesting times ahead for them.
Yeah, interesting times ahead for another manager we spoke to earlier on in the show as well, Paul Fairclough. England C game coming up Tuesday against Wales at Llanelli Town. But the further announcement this week of a forthcoming home game for England C, Bank Holiday Monday, 6th of May at Aldershot Town. England C against Nepal. I think adults are going to be £10, under-16s £5. That's an important boost for the non-league international side, that there's a second game and it's a home game. And hopefully a chance to get a big crowd down at the recreation ground.
Yeah, I think it promises to be a really great occasion. You know, this game was planned in for 2020 at the end of that season, and then obviously COVID came along and wiped everything out, and it's kind of been on the back burner ever since then. I know it's been a desire to kind of get the game on, and here we are a few years on. I had to wait a little while, but it will happen, and it's going to be like I say, a big occasion. There's a really thriving Nepalese community in sort of the Aldershot area, and now we're hoping for a big crowd and a chance for, you know, the Nepal national side to be coming down there, and for England to have, you know, it's another new kind of venture for this team that has you know, we all think things really special and does so many amazing different, play so many amazing different games over the years, and there's been so many different places, and this is another kind of historic kind of moment for them. And as you say, the big game against Wales on Tuesday night, it will be first, and Paul's kind of waiting with bated breath over the weekend to hope that most of his squad come through unscathed. I'm sure there'll be some changes. There already has been a couple of changes after some injuries the other night, from changes from the original squad that was picked. So an opportunity for non-league three nines to go across the border and try and get that victory. And we all know what happened last time they went to Wales, as Wales ended up in with a thumping 4-0 win, and one of the lads who scored in that game, Will Evans, is now top scorer for Newport County in League Two. So that shows the quality that they're going up against. He's gone with, it's obviously an open age squad these days, and there's quite a bit of experience in there, and players in their 30s, which is not traditionally been the case over the last few years when it's been under 23s and been in those tournaments. But it's a great opportunity for these players to there's only a couple of lads, one lad now, I think Gus Scott Morris, who was capped last year in the squad, and what an amazing opportunity to go and represent your country and pull on the Three Lions jersey, and same for the Welsh lads who are getting a chance to do that as well, and go up against a big football rival. And I've spoken to I've been lucky to attend so many of these games over the years and speak to so many of these players, and at the time, and then even after many years later, and that I see this sort of the impact that it, playing for England, see what it means to them, what it means to their families as well, and how they kind of treasure these moments where they are an international, and they are picked out above everybody else or of their peers. And seen so many go on to amazing things, and look from that last England squad team last season that won 1-0 against Wales at Altrincham. I think six are in the Football League now as well, even from that squad as well. So it's an amazing opportunity, and such a unique thing, and something that's so special. As you say, Paul's been picking squads for quite a while now, and the enthusiasm, you can still see it's there for him, and how much he loves the challenge of trying to get an England side out there that go and do their best, and that's what we'll be hoping for on Tuesday at Llanelli.
Well, that's it. And if you're in that area, it sounds like a game well worth trying to get out and view. And if not, then Bank Holiday Monday, May the 6th, order shot for that England Nepal game. Stick that in your diaries. Not too far down the road from Aldershot, of course. I guess we should probably make mention of the final 100% record going this week. Combined Counties Premier South Farnham Town, been on the show earlier on in the season. They've now played 25, won 24. A 0-0 draw against second placer Knaphill Midweek. They're still unbeaten. It's still a fantastic season. And surely they're heading for promotion.
You think so? I mean, it's an amazing run to get 24 games. It's incredible, and you sort of start thinking, "Oh, could they actually go all the way?" And I mean, it was always, I guess, always going to be unlikely. Obviously, Knaphill are up there as well, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So, great run that one of those come to an end. But they'll be now, I'm sure, facing on going the whole season unbeaten, even with that draw. Again, what a great achievement, and a club that's really kind of been thriving the last few years, and you've seen so much stuff they've done on their YouTube and all the sort of social media, and how the club's grown. I've seen some of the crowds down there have been, I think they've even tipped into four figures this season. It's been an amazing kind of sort of journey they've been on for sort of the last few years, and I think they obviously had high hopes in the Vars as well, didn't they? And they sort of just didn't quite go their way, and they were kind of shocked. A shock exit in that a few rounds ago, but you can see where they're heading and where they want to get to, and I think they're like a couple of other leagues, and how it's starting to really take shape, aren't they? And you can sort of see where the title parties are going to happen, and they just need to bounce back, and I'm sure they'll be trying to get that another win streak going again.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be reporting on many a title party in the coming weeks. I'm looking at Chesterfield, top of the National League. What are they now? 23 clear.
Win it on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, I think they're already guaranteed a home semi-final in those playoffs.
Who's that?
I don't think there's much doubt as to who title it's going to be. But 91 points, there's still many points to be racked up and records to be broken.
Yeah, definitely going to be looking to that. I think they just want to get over that line now and then, you know, start a part. And they can win it Saturday if Barnet drop points. They'll be fairly early game, Chesterfield at Oldham, which no easy task. But they'll know they'll sort of be. I'm sure if they get that win, they'll be on the coach home, keeping a close eye on what Barnet are doing. At Woking, obviously at the moment Bromley can still catch them as well, but that would be if Chesterfield win, then that'll be out of reach from a Bromley perspective. So it's getting close now. They are very, very nearly there, and as you say, if it all goes disastrously wrong, home game in the playoff, so can't grumble at that either, can you?
Again, they've been a great advert for the non-league game, as is non-league day, Saturday the 16th of March, so the next weekend from us. International break giving clubs a chance to, well, appeal to the wider football fan base and more besides as well. Seemingly getting more creative every season. You know, you seem to think that there's maybe we've seen all the schemes, but there seems to be... Is there new creative brains involved within non-league football? There's different, you know, permutations as to what you pay, what you get, what the entertainment is. Non-league day, again, hopefully, weather permitting, is going to be a festival of non-league football.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? I think we say so often, James Doe's idea is, you know, all those years ago, he probably, you know, I haven't spoken to him, I don't think he ever imagined it would kind of get quite like this. I think you just thought it'd be sort of a few mates on Facebook that would kind of you know, see it and go along to their local club, and it's grown into this huge thing, and James and all the people around him and who support him and sponsors that do so much to help get the day on, you know, deserve a lot of credit. And I think it's just, you know, it goes to show the kind of the strength of, you know, of the game at this level, that it's still going as it is nowadays. And as you say, clubs are thinking of all sorts of brilliant and wonderful ideas to get people into their grounds and to get engaged in non-league football. You know, I think we can never put a number on it, but, you know, think of, there must be thousands and thousands of people who are now watching non-league football regularly, who first came into contact with non-league on non-league day. And I know there's certainly clubs, isn't there, that, you know, got volunteers or even, you know, people regularly working in the part of committees and secretaries and all that kind of thing. Again, that was their first introduction to this level of the game, was through non-league day, which is brilliant. And it just shines that light on the game and shows kind of the best of non-league and what it's all about and why we all love it so much and why it's got such a hold on us. And it's just fantastic, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more people ticking through turnstiles a week Saturday for that first time and thinking, oh, I love this, so I'm going to come back. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? And really, really showing off, you know, what's so good about non-league football.
And talking about showing off about what's good about non-league football, a great idea and a way of engaging with fans. National Game Awards announced in last weekend's non-league. It's back, May the 22nd.
I feel like it's only just finished. I feel like I'm just recovering from last year's, and here we are again.
But we got a multitude of categories. Check out the non-league paper for all of those. But a chance for fans to get involved, and entries already open for this season.
Get involved, you know, this is it. No excuses not to get involved. So you want, can't have after the event saying who this person should have won, this team should have won, why didn't you pick, you know, it's all on the fans. So they've got the opportunity to show some love to who they think's most deserved. And I always think the thing about the National Game Awards is, what I always enjoy about it is, you know, we obviously recognise the teams and the players and the sort of the cream of non-league on the pitch, but also it's the cream of non-league off the pitch, and the unsung hero, the fans who do so much for their clubs, or, you know, clubs within the community sort of stuff away from the actual games. You know, I think it's just, we hope it recognises so many different people, and it's always a great, if slightly stressful in the build-up occasion, but it's always a great occasion. And please pick up the paper. We'll be sort of flagging up each award over the next sort of couple of next few weeks to kind of prompt the mind. But ultimately, yeah, get your votes in and your nominations in, and then we'll have a voting process as well. Get your nominations in and shout about who deserves to be shouted about.
Indeed. So plenty of non-league action this weekend. More details about National Game Awards. I'd imagine some bits about what clubs are doing for non-league day, maybe. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, all of that. As you say, England C preview. I know you've spoken to Paul. I went and had a chat with him this week as well. We've got some bit of a FA Trophy and FA Vase reaction. Caught up with Fylde manager Chris Beach, talking about their sort of incredible form that sort of propelled them out of the relegation zone, and hoping that they can survive and stay safe in the National League this season. I think we've checked in with Ross Allen at Guernsey, Guernsey goal machine. Ever since Guernsey were formed all those years ago, Ross Allen was rattling them in and still going now, even though he did have a sabbatical at one point as well. And he took the National Game Awards. He won our Golden Boot one year from memory. So plenty going on in this week's paper, and as you say, all the drama and all the action from the pitch, and a hopefully full programme and no postponed games in this week's paper is the dream.
That's the dream. The dream is that we just all get a copy of the non-league paper on Sunday morning and sit there and enjoy it. Thanks for all your help, as ever, Matt Badcock. I'll speak to you again very soon.
Thanks, Tim. See you soon.
And there we have it. That's it for this week. A big thank you to all of you for listening and to all of my guests this week. Don't forget to get involved on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thanks for your support. Goodbye.